Right, you are listening to Dynamite in the Brain with your hosts, Brian Smith and Anthony Askew, with special guest Philip O'Connor. Tonight's episode, Moomin Mania!
I think we're about 20 years too late for Moomin Mania, but however. Dynamite in the Brain.
Thanks for listening. On today's show, we take a trip back to 1969, 1972, and 1990 to sample the different anime adaptations of Tove Jansson's classic Moomin novels and comic strips. And joining us tonight is Philip O'Connor.
Hello, everybody.
Yay. Hello. I looked up how to pronounce Tove Jansson's name on YouTube, so I hope Jarvis Cocker is also pronouncing it correctly. It was his pronunciation that I took it.
Why was he talking? Like, what's
he? He was doing a reading of one of her stories.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's kind of amazing to think of Jarvis Cocker doing a reading of a Moomin novel. Mm.
I use Wikipedia to get the pronunciation because there's a little sound file you can press and play.
Oh. I just use Brian. It's just easier that way.
Well, we'll just, yeah, assume he's correct.
And I spelt it out pseudo-phonetically for me, so I did.
Yeah. Tove Jansson. Let's all do it.
So, guys, Moomins. I think before we get into this, let's talk about our history with the Moomins, I think. So, as I'm the oldest, I'll start. The Moomins were basically one of the two books. No, three books I would read as a kid. I would read Moomin novels, I would read Doctor Who adaptations, yeah, and I would read Dick King Smith books. That was it. That was the only things I was interested in reading. And I also was the right age for the dub of, I should have done this research. I can't remember which country it's from, but like the stop motion felt Moomin mm-hmm. animation. That used to air on ITV. Which, and it was one of these things which like creeped me out, but I also never wanted to stop watching it either. It was like hit that sweet spot for kids of something slightly spooky, slightly otherworldly.
Slightly. Phew, right.
Have you seen that felt version?
I've not, but anything, if there's nothing slightly scary about the Moomins, it's all scary.
I don't know, well, some of these greatly reduce the scariness.
What, the idea that they're felt, or...?
No, I mean, the adaptations we're talking about today.
Okay, yeah.
We'll get into that later.
And now, when you say that you were scared of the kind of like the slightly creepy kind of animation, are we talking on the same level as the devil sequence in The Adventures of Mark Twain?
I don't know The Adventures of Mark Twain, so
I can't tell you. Look up the devil
sequence. I think I've seen that sequence, yes, but...
Yeah, it's kind of like...
But only as an adult, so...
Even as an adult, you kind of look at it going, well, how did this scene get into a kid's movie? It's kind of weird and depressing, but I came into the Moomins in kind of a backwards fashion. I watched the 1990s TV show... And I was just talking to my brother yesterday, and he said, oh, yeah, we had a couple of Moomin books, which is probably why I remember knowing about the Moomins before I watched the Moomins TV show. It's probably why I used to run home from school going, the Moomins, the Moomins, the Moomins, and not actually remembering why I liked the Moomins.
Yeah.
How are you, Anthony?
I need to comment on the Devil Mark Twain thing, because I think that's scarier now that I'm an adult. Than if I was like, as a kid, I would like, I'd imagine I would wince at it and not want to watch it. But when you know, there's a lot more knowledge behind it now as an adult, and just, yeah, that's too scary for anyone. But, Moomins, it's kind of before my time in the sense of, I must have been late to the party. And I love the party because I used to watch it all the time, but, I mean, it's 1990, the one I would have watched, it's that batch. So
yes, that batch, which I think
when did we get it?
Aired on the BBC, probably must have been between 93 and 97, because I remember watching it when I was at university.
I'd have probably been, yeah. Well, if that's the case, I'd have watched it when it was on. If that's the case, so it's not too bad. Yeah, it's. I used to kind of watch it and think, oh, it's a bit creepy. But as Brian says, you just can't help but going back. A bit glutton for punishment, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's a sweet spot that it hits. It's not so scary that
that you're never going to watch it again.
You're not going to want to watch it. I mean, I was scared of weird things.
Oh, come on. Throw one in the list.
So the thing which I get reminded about by my mother is when I first saw Rent-A-Ghost. I don't know how you're familiar with Rent-A-Ghost.
Yes.
So the characters used to be able to teleport, and I did not like that. Apparently, I was not on board with the idea of teleportation.
How did they teleport? Was it like a weird teleportation method?
They would just disappear. I think there'd be like a sound effect, and then they'd
reappear.
And my tiny young brain could not cope with that, and it apparently scared the life out of me that they would teleport.
Okay.
I don't remember being scared of most programs when I was little, but I do remember being terrified out of my mind of one particular episode of Doctor Who with Sylvester McCoy in the role, where it's the episode where the aliens are taking over like a kind of secondary level girls' school. So all the girls turn around and have these massive claws and just begin attacking people by surrounding them and smothering them, and then suddenly they die. And I don't know why, but my little tiny little brain back then was like, like, only recently did I get to watch the episode again and gone, there's nothing scary about this at all. But if you'd have asked the little version of Philip, oh, that was the most terrifying thing ever.
Oh, you softies. The only thing that scared me was an advert. Is it John West Tuner, the advert which had the bear? Did a Tuner advert have a bear in it or something?
Possibly, that sounds
whenever the bear came on, I used to scream. But that was like a bear, that was not...
Are you sure you're thinking of the one who used to sit on a glacier mint?
No! Couldn't eat those sweets.
Oh, God.
Oh.
They were great until they stuck to the back of your teeth.
Well, is it the same company who did that I think we've discussed this before, you know. the sweet version. So the glacier mints are obviously mints. Who did the sweet version?
Yes, they had like glacier.
Oh yeah, I think
and they were even stickier.
Oh no, I'm thinking of something.
You could barely
remember those little, you'd get a little cylinder biscuit and it would have a little tuft of Eisnen.
What? Yes,
they are by no means foxes of glitter fruit.
They're something gems, aren't they?
Ice gems.
I know. Oh, God.
That's it.
Do you have
gems.
A polar bear?
I was sitting there going,
do you remember ice gems? It's not to, just like the Peter Kay podcast, just remembering things.
Well, it does have a polar bear. I'm not much of a linker for a picture, but they did have a polar bear as well.
It would be really bad if, like, the picture for this moving podcast is a picture of a nice gems bear.
Let me just check.
There was them. There was glacier mint, whatever they were called, and glacier fruits. All very tasty.
Ice gem.
I think we've just...
I'm sure we have. Podcast the biscuit bit was boring, but the ice bit was great. Oh.
Okay, let's talk more about movies then. Let's go to 1969. And we've got TMS doing the production. We've got Masaaki Osumi, the puppeteer, who would also go on to direct the first six episodes of Lupin the Third. And obviously quoted as being a hero to Watanabe of Cowboy Bebop fame. And we discussed Yamamoto of Michiko and Hachin fame. They're all about Masaaki Osumi. And the animation director is Yasuo Otsuka from other Lupin the Third things, such as Castle of Cagliostro, but he also directed the biggest thing he did of Lupin for him personally, is Secret of Mamo. And he's on loads of assorted Studio Ghibli projects and related projects. So he's in charge of the animation direction at this point. And the cast are a lot of people who didn't do much animation because they were mainly live action actors. And so we've got Kyoko Kishida as Moomin, who Wikipedia tells me her most notable role is as the widow in The Woman in the Dunes. Later on, she was the narrator on Princess Tutu and Vampire Princess Mew, and as well as being an actor and a voiceover artist, she also wrote children's books. And the other notable name I saw was, at least from this episode, Moomin Papa is played by Hitoshi Takagi, the voice of the Big Totoro. Again, he hasn't done much animation, but he did. He was on the Gregory Horror Show anime, where he played a character called Mummy Papa, which I assume was a gag on Moomin Papa.
The Greg who horror what?
Gregory Horror Show. Yes. Do you not remember the video game?
Gosh.
I think they might have released some of the anime.
That's before my time, or way outside of my spectrum.
It's PlayStation 2. Like 1999, I think. Was
the horror? I never played scary games back then. Clues in the title.
It's kind of like a, it's kind of like a silly survival horror. The video game is.
Outside of my spectrum, unfortunately.
So this was TMS production to begin with. First 26 episodes of TMS, and then after that it switches to Mushi Pro. And in this episode, it's a very, 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 very loose adaptation of the first part of the 1948 novel Finn Family Moomin Troll.
By loose, we mean perilously falling over a cliff.
Well, except it does have, like, the key plot point of that story beat. Basically, in this story, they receive a hat, a magical hat, and when things go into it, weird things happen to them. So, we should probably describe who the Moomins are as well, for people who have no idea who the Moomins are.
I was
about to describe it, and I thought, this will make no sense. I was just assuming up to this point, everybody knows who the Moomins are. Okay, so they are trolls.
Oh, what did you just... Okay. Yeah.
But not, you wouldn't expect trolls to look like this. I think people would describe them as upright hippos.
Yes.
I was about to say.
Sort of white, and they're a family of Moomin Papa, Moomin Mama, and Moomin. And they all live in Moomin House. In Moomin Valley.
God, the Moomins have a lot of ownership in that land, I have to say.
Or maybe they're just named after the land.
That's true.
Mind blown.
We just don't know.
And
I mean, the author was Swedish. I mean, they could be communist for all we know.
Finnish.
Same thing, really, bro.
I don't know whether the Swedes would agree with that.
Or they were going to turn racist on this.
I was about to say, the minute you guys both said in time, it's like, yep.
It's over.
Yeah.
And also in this episode, we meet Hemulin, who kind of look a bit like the Moomins, but not quite.
And they think that Hemulin kind of looks like an English vicar?
I used to always think that as a child. Always.
I was hoping I wasn't the only one.
And their thing is that they like to collect things. And there's Sniff, who is some sort of indeterminate rodent man.
Let's say a lesser evolved version of a kangaroo.
See, I've never thought too deep into this. This is like beyond my normal.
It's like how to describe Moomins to people who've never seen them before.
It's the same kind of thing as if you ask a 5-year-old who's watched Dragon Ball to describe it to you. They'll make it into something like Lord of the Rings. When in actuality, it will be the most simplest thing in the world. But like Brian said, trying to describe the Moomins to people who aren't Moomins fans, and by the way, I don't actually know who isn't a Moomin fan right now on the planet. I can't actually find anyone who actually says, oh, I hate the Moomins. Why do you hate the Moomins? Like, why do you hate sunshine?
It's too hot.
And also in this episode, we get Little Mai, who's this small, mischievous girl. Normally wears a red dress and has red hair tied up.
Very tightly tied up.
Yes. I don't think anybody else of note from the actual... So the muskrat is also in this episode. Who I was like, I couldn't even remember being a real character, but is a real character.
Was he in the 90s one?
He were, yes, but not much. And he is in the books as well. And his deal is that he's a muskrat and he doesn't believe there's any point to anything.
Quite deep for a kid's show.
It culminates in Moomin Mama going to give him a book. Or is it a book? It's the hat.
It's the hat, yes.
And he goes, well, it was a waste of your time to come up here. Oh, well, I'll take it back. No, it'll be a waste of your time to take it back.
I like how he wears like a sheet, like a kid.
Yeah, it's like, he's like the John the Baptist character, you know, just living out in the wilderness in the middle of nowhere in the valley.
I wish there was more him in the 90s version because he's a bit of a badass.
And, well, there also is in this episode, who is, I believe, not from the book.
Really?
He's a really? Character called The Captain.
Really? Really, Brian?
He needs his own show!
I had to double check that he wasn't like some weird character from the comic strip.
Because I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, how we know The Captain isn't one of the characters that Tove Jansson created. He is literally parachuted into the story. And I mean that literally.
And also, his parrot does the exposition of who the Moomins are in this episode at the start. Because he flies into the episode on an airship with a talking parrot.
Yeah,
and the talking parrot has apparently been to Moomin Valley before and can fill the captain in on who the Moomins are.
It's like, but I'd say, after growing up with the 1990s show and reading a couple of the books, that opening is the most insanely cold opening ever. It's like, there's a flying airship and there's a talking parrot and there's a captain and the parrot's telling the captain about Moomin Valley and the captain decides, sure, do you know what I think I'll do? I'll jump out of my floating airship. For no, he doesn't take supplies or anything like, he's like the worst nautical captain ever. He takes nothing with him except a pipe.
He's very magical.
Yeah, he doesn't even take.
He has an aura to him.
He's a hero. Constantly reminded of him. Because the reason he becomes a hero is because he helps save Moomin from an antlion.
Yeah.
And again, was a character I'd forgotten was in the books, the antlion. And so he goes into gets taken out to the Moomin house, gets given a meal.
A meal? He keeps getting a four-course meal every 5 seconds. Mama just keeps putting plate, and all he keeps doing is that stupid, gormless smile. And just keeps eating.
It's a great idea.
See, it is. This is the thing. It's not very Moomin. Well, it is. It's not fair to say it's not very Moomin-y. It's not Moomin-y enough.
Yeah.
Well, but it is a pretty good boys cartoon from the 1960s.
Oh, I was going to say, it feels like someone who described to another person the story of the Moomins and they animated that.
I would agree. Yeah.
Like, there are bits of it that are correct, but the most of it is just totally wrong. It's tone deaf compared to the other incarnations.
Yeah, it's like the origin of this magic hat is wrong.
But it's also...
But the story beats with what happens with the hat. The turning the Moomin house into a jungle and Moomin changing shape and no one believing that he's Moomin is straight out of the book and maintains the emotional beat that Moomin Mama's the only one
which is lovely. In.
Yeah, like, thank God Moomin Mama hadn't gone out for, like, messages or anything like that, because if she had have left the house,
he's dead.
The captain
would have said, because the captain knew all along.
But except, of course, they then undercut that emotional beat by revealing that, the captain, he's such a great guy, he was only pretending that he didn't know
and
who
he just wanted
was.
To push him over.
So
pushes him over brutally.
It's like, seriously, when is it Moomin Papa who says that? He says, no. He always knew you were Moomin. He just did. It's like, how do you even know that, Moomin?
Even the mother agrees. Well, it was all in a ploy to stop Moomin from wanting to go on his adventure with him. So there's some logic there. But what's scarier or more eerie, the fact that you don't know where the hat comes from, or in this, it's a scary, scary man stealing people?
The only thing I can think of when I got to the end of the episode was, there is a very dangerous individual in the form of the antlion roaming around Moomin Valley and no one has come to arrest this guy. I mean, he poisons people with a magical hat. He attempts to kidnap Moomin, and when it's revealed that he's the villain all along. He just goes, mwahahaha, and then wanders to the other end
then
of the
valley. Then the captain chases him. That was his next adventure.
What? Just, why?
Yeah. How did he kind of set up the circus and everything? It's very elaborate.
And did no one ever notice, like, Moomin Valley seems like a very small place, geographically speaking, right? So how would you set up an entire circus without anyone noticing? Is it just one of those things where it's just like, just Phil, just go with it, it's fine.
Because our main man's not around. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Snufkin.
Yeah, I mean, if Snufkin had been there, boom, some shit would have gone down. People would have just been slapped to the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I was half expecting when the captain left was for it to say, note, the captain died on his way back to his home planet.
I have to go now. My planet needs me.
Yeah.
And I love how the captain looks through his eyeglasses to see Moomin fall and hurt himself and just smile.
I love it because you see like a view through his binoculars. Then he takes the binoculars away and it's kind of magnified exactly as it was. They weren't working. They were just lenses.
I mean, when he takes the glasses down, like when he has the glasses up, they look, like Moomin looks very far away the way it's supposed to. But like you said, Andy, when he takes them away, it's almost as if the captain could lean down and shout at him. But
he could pull him up if he wanted, but no. I like the captain, though. I don't feel he fits, but I like him.
Yeah.
I have to say, for all of my why is he even in this episode, he's actually the main point for the whole episode, other than obviously Moomin. But it's like...
Plus, yeah, got me next cosplay.
That'd be great.
I can't wait to see you, Brian, with the triangular inverted costume where it'll start narrow at your shoulders and widen out till it's almost like a ballroom gown.
So apparently, according to the Japanese wiki, I think it says that Tove Jansson saw episode 7 of this series and was like, this is not my Moomin.
Yeah, her comment, I went on to the Moomin Wikipedia, which seems to have, like, its origin seemed to have been written by a bunch of Swedes and Finns, because, like, a lot of the grammar is not corrected, and there are a couple of actual, like, Scandinavian words in the text, as if someone hasn't quite translated it. But one of the things that I did come across was a quote from her saying, no car, no gun, no violence. That was her comment.
Yes, and that's the thing. I'm not sure where exactly that comment came.
Yeah, as they say on Wikipedia, it's unattributed.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's like, when was that said? Because as we get to the next one, there's a gun in the first episode of New Moomin. So, which makes me think it was a little late. So I think the deal, as I understand, with these first two series was that they were allowed to be shown in Japan, but they were not supposed to be shown outside of Japan.
That was the agreement. I see.
Yes, but
thank God,
apparently that was not the case. And obviously it's definitely not the case now. People have been uploading episodes. Like when it reran in Japan, people recorded them off the TV and started uploading them to like video, Daily Motion, YouTube.
True Moomin fans uploading subtitled versions of it and pressing the upload button going, it's not what she would have wanted.
No.
But I'm pleased they did, because these were, and up until when people did that, these were like some sort of mythical beast to me. It was like this thing I knew existed, but I thought I was never going to see.
Are you pleased?
I am, yeah.
Do we want to talk about the actual episodes that we got to watch? Because the reason why I bring it up is because whoever subtitled the first two episodes, i.e. the 69 and the 72 version, English doesn't seem to be a primary language for them.
Oh, no. This is ARR, who I believe stands for Another Random Russian.
Ah.
So it's like, come quickly, there is trouble. And then you go, what trouble is there? There is trouble. It's like,
but it's still better English than most of that Moomin wiki.
That's true.
Yeah, I thought it was bad till I went to start checking that Moomin wiki, and I was like, this is English, but I do not understand what they are saying.
This is Google English.
Yeah, we they're very variable, and but they were quite handy for finding first episodes of rare things.
They do the job.
Until they stop.
Definitely do the job. Yeah,
they do the job.
Far worse. Far worse.
We've seen far worse.
Yeah, but like the three of us are here now. We can correct them all now. It's fine.
Exactly. And they still perfectly understand.
What else have we watched by R?
A lot of the sort of when we did like the first episodes of something from a year.
I see. So did AR do the rest of the Moomin series from 69? Or
they tend to only do first episodes and things.
I looked it up. They only got a couple of, I think they got about 20 episodes in and stopped. I just gave up. Which is kind of upsetting when you think about the fact that, hang on, if you're committed enough to track down.
Oh, is that of the 91 or the 72 or the 69 one?
I think the 69 one. Because I tried looking for it online and all I can find is about the first 10 or 20 episodes and that's it. It's as if the other rest of the episodes just simply don't exist.
Or that was all that re-aired in Japan, maybe.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay. We should probably talk about the character designs. They're a little off-model in this, at least off-book model.
As I understand it, right, the Moomins have always been depicted as eggshell white. Like, it's not pure white, it's an off-white. And the Moomins in this are grey.
Yes.
So I can only imagine that this is the Moomins going through their grey Hulk phase. That's the only thing I can explain.
They also look like they've been stood too close to a radiator for a while and they've melted a bit. And whose phone's going off?
But yeah, they are most hippo-like in this. They're hippo-like a lot, but definitely in this.
Little Mai's more.
Yeah, awful. Loses her hair.
The hair.
She looks like a stone.
Which is where you get the slapstick violence that I'm sure Tove Jansson was not happy with.
I would love to watch an interview with her, actually, because...
Well, there's interviews in Finnish on YouTube.
Oh, my second language, Finnish. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there must be some English language interviews with her.
You'd hope so.
Righty-ho, let's move on to New Moomin. So, following these TMS episodes, the production got switched to Mushi Pro and Rintaro directing. And then, the other thing we should mention in a previous episode, but not this one yet, is these are also World Masterpiece Theatre.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, this is the period before it went all Nippon Animation all the time. And then they came back in 1972 with Mushipro again and Rintaro again at the helm, and the cast all the same, and the music the same. But the character designs are now much more recognisable as Moomin characters.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting close.
No, it feels like they're drawn a little cuter.
Yeah, it's like we're looking at this for merchandising purposes.
Yeah, what's her name's even got pink hair. Snork Maiden. I always forget her.
Snork Maiden.
Or
Non-Non.
That's because in this they renamed her Non-Non. Because they just felt she had to have a name.
It's like you call everyone Moomin Troll, Moomin Papa, Moomin Mama, Snufkin, Stinky. It's like you get Snork Maiden going, nope, gotta change the name.
Yeah, and they're even fine with Mimble's daughter.
You go to all of that expense and just go, whatever. It's like, oh, no. Then, as you said, Brian, Tove Jansson was not a fan of this.
No. But even on the next series, they still give her a name, but not Non-Non.
Yeah.
And it feels a lot classier with the opening and sort of the incidental music. It feels like this is... It feels like what you'd expect a World Masterpiece Theatre thing to be.
Yeah, it's even opens to the 1940 style Walt Disney book open, know, with the embossed book.
Yeah, and I'm curious as whether they do that all the time or whether that's just for this episode, because that happens throughout the episode, doesn't it? Because the character who has invaded Moomin Land is not a Moomin character. He is a character from Japanese myth, and it is the Baku. The dream-eating tapir. Who we may remember from Beautiful Dreamer. The Yusai Sura film. and also the episode of Eurosight Sora, which comes before Beautiful Dreamer, which has a similar plot. And so in this story, the Baku has arrived during winter in Moominland.
Hibernation time for the...
Moominland. I think Moominland might be the theme park. yes, he arrives in Moomin Valley during the hibernation, as you said, Anthony, and because obviously there's loads of tasty dreams to be had. And the Grok is upset about this. Now, the Grok, as I understand, is like this terribly frightening anthropomorphic representation of winter.
Terribly frightening.
Who says nothing, and you sort of freeze at her touch.
I would point out that for a character who doesn't say much, she has a lot to say to the Baku. Like, all of a sudden, there's like, I told you they're going to run away from you. And then the Baku comes and invade. Okay, so we should say at the beginning, the Baku goes to the first person that they can find, which I think is Mai and...
Yes.
Yeah, Mai and Nimble's daughter is the dream.
Yeah, so they invade, or he doesn't invade, but he wanders into their dream. And they, of course, because they've never seen him before, they don't know what he is, they take off running. Now, I would point out that in a dream, there is a point by which you start running. But here's the thing. It's the minute they see him, they start running away. And I'm like, where are you going? You're running at full tilt away. Where? They don't seem to be going anywhere. In fact, as the episode goes on, the Baku goes from person to person and seems to connect all their dreams together. So until finally they're having one vast collective dream, which gets closer to the Matrix that I'm actually comfortable with.
That's the thing. None of them are very good. If this was my dream, I'd have summoned the power of the gods. It's my dream. I can do whatever I want.
Oh, get you,
I am
Mr.
a very
lucid
good
dreamer.
Lucid dream. I'll have you know. I'd destroy that beast.
I'd have to say, like, I am a very lucid dreamer myself, and I have to say, everyone's choices for their dreams, not very good. What is my the sister dream? They're dreaming that they're in Moomin Valley. What's Moomin doing? He's in Moomin Valley. What's Moomin Papa dreaming about? He's in Moomin Valley doing things that Moomin Papa does. Like, do you not want to, like, the whole point of dreams is that you do things that you don't normally do. It's like, why would you dream about something you're going to do in 5 minutes? It's like you and me and Anthony collectively dreaming that we're going to be doing a podcast.
The thing is, though, bear in mind that there is a little bit of logic to this, because if they always hibernate through winter, this is something they never get the chance to do. Oh.
That's true. Your dreams are sorting out the thoughts of the day. So maybe when you dream during hibernation, you're sorting out your thoughts for the entire previous
week. But yeah, my dreams would be far better. I'd be flying around shooting blasts at people and pulling guns out of thin air. And
Muskrat is not behaving like Muskrat.
Different.
He's behaving like the character Stinky.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because Stinky is like the bad boy. I think first appears in the comic strips, and I think then later appears in the books. And it's like, he's the one person who commits crimes, and his argument is that if he didn't, the police wouldn't have any work to do.
There's a level of psychological complexity to that statement that I'm not comfortable with either.
I'm pretty sure it's some sort of degree of satire going on there somewhere in that characterization.
The Antlion from the previous episode looks a lot like him, actually.
He looks a bit like him, yes, but that's why I was like...
Is it him?
Is that Enrico Stinky? But no, the Antlion is a character as well. The other thing the main other thing I had of note is, what is going on with the Storm's character design?
It's like, yes, I have just wandered in from a Shakespearean play Victorian age.
And I've lost my glasses. And my personality.
And I see completely new one. Inhabiting the personality of a theatre director.
He is he's animated. He's very hands-on. He's just...
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, I have to say, for someone who's a bit of a wishy-washy kind of bit scared, he's very quick to break out the old guns. Like, yeah. He's like,
he can dream like us, you see. He knows what to do.
If you don't understand something or don't like it, just destroy it.
I can't remember the police chief. Was he in the 90s show? I really can't remember any of these characters bar Snufkin, it seems.
He is the popular character. I liked the colour design on Mimble's daughter.
Quite pale, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, she's kind of almost, you know, like the kind of the willowy, wispishy kind of look.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that her sister is like this little tiny squat dwarf. It's like,
yeah, I think, yeah, I like the contrast those that makes between their personalities as well.
There is something I want to bring up about Little Mai, but it'll wait until the 1990 show because it's more readily apparent in the 1990 show. We'll get to it anyway. But yeah, I was thinking about it. It was like, okay, it's a point that was brought up in the 1969 version for me, and it's become an apparent problem for me in the 1972 version. In the 69 version, Moomin Mama is giving the captain all of this food and whatever, and it brings up an interesting point. She brings him, like, ham and chicken and beef and potatoes and stuff like that. And the other thing I think is, are the Moomins vegetarian? Because I just need to know that. I would like to know. It's like and the next question is, where are the chickens? Where's she getting this from? It's like, she doesn't get it delivered unless there's some sort of storehouse in the Moomin Valley that we've never seen. And then the 72 version brings up the next question. What has Moomin Papa got a rifle for? What is he going to shoot? There's nothing in the valley to hunt other than the other citizens of Moomin Valley.
He's ready to snap.
Well, according to the internet, in the book 6 of the comic strips, there is a strip about a story arc about Moomin becoming a vegetarian. So that suggests that they're not vegetarians.
Right.
Okay. Brian, it still doesn't clear up the point of why have a bunch of pacifist, cute, innocent creatures got a gun for?
Because the animators drew it in.
It's like, it's the point of the episode where I go, why? It's not necessary.
It's a dream.
Yeah, that's true. It's a dream. So, but here's the thing, like, even I would say, yeah, but that's stretching it even further because, like, if they're going to dream about doing ordinary things like, I don't know, living in Moomin Valley, why would they have something they never had
spaceship.
Before? It's like, oh, I can't do that.
Well, yeah, but hey, they're being invaded by a character who does not even belong in their genre, let alone their country.
Can we talk about the Baku? Because I have to say his first contact procedure is just absolutely rubbish. His first contact procedure is, hey! Not, I'm safe. You don't have anything to fear. Peace.
He does get the best line of the episode there at the end when he assures the viewers that the characters will all be awake next week.
It's like, no, I haven't killed him yet. It's like, what?
I didn't like this episode all that much. It was a bit long-winded. Long-winded.
Yeah, I thought it was some nice animation, particularly the bits when they're in the dark and the lights start appearing. They all start fighting over the one shaft of sunlight.
I didn't appreciate the almost Osamu Dezaki freeze frames as we go from page to page to page, almost for scene for scene. It's like, okay, it's a book. I get it. Stop rubbing it in.
But at the same time, I quite like the fact that the Baku sort of exists outside the story.
Yeah. Which leads to an even better question. Then it's an almost meta one. It's like, if the Baku lives outside of the story, does that mean that he knows that the Moomins are fictional? And in which case, would he not try to warn them they're fictional characters?
That would be a nightmare for them.
It would be. I bet nightmares don't taste as nice as sweet dreams.
Oh.
But yeah, watching this, I was like, Mamoru Oshii surely was the right age to have watched this in 1972. Yeah, there's lots of dreamlike things, which was particularly the use of light and dark.
Yeah.
And obviously the presence of a Baku and the bit when they start doing like the ring around the roses around the Baku. There's a very similar scene in one of the episodes of Yorosaisura.
I've got to say, the Baku exhibits, again, first contact procedure is terrible, but even further than that, he's also got this problem of, he's not quite thinking the logical thing through here. I mean, like, the, what is the name of that creature? Oh, Grok. The Grok kind of warns the Baku every 5 seconds, stop doing this, you're scaring them, you're scaring them, and the Baku doesn't seem to take it on board. Point two, they're in a snowy valley, and it's, you know, winter, and it's dark, and stuff like that, and his logical answer is to put sunlight on every single snowy covering, which turns into the world's fastest flash flood ever. And it's like, you've been doing this for a while, yeah? Do you not think that this might not end well for the people involved? And again, I hate to bring up the Matrix again, but is it a case of you die in Moomin Valley's dreams? Do you die in Moomin Valley?
So, would you say it's better than the Matrix? Is it better than the Matrix sequels?
Oh, of course. I always forget the exist.
It's better than the Matrix sequels. Let's say that one.
I'm looking at pictures of the growth later on, and it is scary. It's darker coloured. It's go and Google it. It is far scarier than it is in this. 100%.
Do you think Matrix would have been improved with a dream eating tapir as one of the characters?
Probably.
Probably better than those albino twins.
I can't say for certain, but I can certainly say that the Matrix films would have been improved with Newman. I'm just saying.
If Snufkin was Neo.
Yep.
It'd be great.
He plays a harmonica, stops 4 agents from shooting at him, and then saves the world.
Okay, let's move to 1990 and Fun Family Moomin.
Yes!
Apparently it translates to.
Yes!
As we just called Mooming in the UK. And other English speaking areas. I didn't look to see whether America got this dub with the British people pretending to do American accents on it. So I don't know whether they'll be familiar with this. But this is the chief director, Hiroshi Saito, who worked on Real Ghostbusters, Alfred J. Quack, Vicky the Viking, the thing we watched recently, Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Oh, yeah.
Should we just say that he worked on programs that all turned up as American programming, but that, like, it's a 50% chance that his name was renamed as Harry Styles. I'm just saying.
I don't know. I recognize the name. I think a lot of the time his name was on there.
Harry Styles.
Unit director was Masayuki Kojima, who also worked on Real Ghostbusters. But he also directed Master Keaton anime and the Monster anime.
Oh, wow.
And Magical Shopping Arcade, Abenobashi.
More best
and Bottom Fighting Book. That was the thing which surprised. There was two things surprising when I was looking at people today, and that was perhaps bigger. That was the second one I saw, and bigger than the one I mentioned.
From Monster to Bottom Biting Bug.
But seriously, like it shows that he has higher and higher costs at home, like in terms of electricity bills to pay when he goes from.
I think you underestimate how popular that Bottom Biting Bug music video was, though.
Yeah, but like he went from Moomin to Abenobashi to Master Keaton and Monster, and then has finally bottomed out, no pun intended, to Bottom Biting Bug. I mean, overheads must be really high.
If you look at his other stuff, I think he's just a safe pair of hands.
Yeah, he's like the sort of guy, he's the sort of director you would hire where you want the episode done competently and professionally, but no flair and no rocking of the boat. Just get it done and get it finished.
I know people like the Monster anime.
Don't spoil it, mind you.
You're wrong.
I've still not finished reading or watching yet.
It's nowhere near as good as the comic. Script is by Akira Miyazaki, who worked on things like Wonderful Wizard of Oz and Alfred J. Quack again. And the thing which makes this show great, though, is animation director, character designer, and storyboard artist. I think my animator as well, the opening. Yasuhiro Nakura, who had similar roles on Angel's Egg, Metropolis, and did most of the things on the Space Dandy episode, A World with No Saturnus Baby.
Which one was that again?
I believe that's the Suicide Planet. Death Planet.
I can see Metropolis. Yeah, yeah. I can see Space Dandy. Angel's Egg. Having a hard time, Brian.
Wait, didn't do the character design on that. We did the animation direct. He was the animation director on it.
Angel Sectors. We're going to have to do a podcast on that.
We are doing a podcast. Come on if you want.
Yes. Just, oh, that movie. Oh, God.
I seen it in the cinema.
I've not seen it yet.
Ooh. I saw it on good old crappy manga video. VHS. Just, you know, complete with bad dubs, trailers for things like...
Well, it's never had a English release.
Is not?
No.
What are you thinking of instead?
I'm not thinking of that. I'm thinking of the Roger Corman re-edit where he chopped bits of Angel's Egg to pieces and incorporated them into a live action. Yeah. What is that? From the Ashes or something like that?
Something along those lines.
Yeah. That's what I remember. God, you...
That's had an English release, but no. I saw it at Leeds Film Festival in 2009, and it was a case when they went to the studio and asked for a print of it. They go, "You want to watch that?"
Hey, whatever, crazy guys, you can go ahead.
No, I can definitely see. Particularly, I can see the connection between Angel. Now I know he did A World With No Sadness, Baby. There's definitely a link between Angel's Egg and that.
Yeah.
And so, cast-wise, we've got Aki Otsuka as Moomin Papa. Once again, proving things with Aki Otsuka in them tend to be good.
Yeah, they just improved by 20%.
Yes. So, for those people who've not heard us singing his praises before, he's, of course, Solid Snake, Battelle, Blackbeard. He was Girl Go 13 once. He's Blackjack. And, of course, he's John Sleepy Estes from Madball 34.
So what we're saying here to the people listening to the podcast is Moomin Papa is played by a voice actor whose primary stock in trade is burnt out, bitter loners.
If I was a voice actor, I would voice any one of those characters.
Or
uses them all.
Or cold, calculating psychopaths. Just saying.
Moomin Mama is Ikuko Tani, and she was most recently, amongst all her roles as grandmothers, she seems to play a lot of, she was Tsubone in Hunter Hunter. She's
the guard of the...
Yeah, she's like the old butler who turns into vehicles.
And it still has a big face on it.
Yes. She was a great character when she showed up. I thought, excellent. What a really strange character that I really like.
Oh, God.
Moomin Troll is Minami Takeyama, who is the voice of Detective Conan. And this was the other weird thing I had, which had completely passed me by, is that I had not realized that in 2005, she married the creator of Detective Conan.
Oh.
And then they got divorced in 2007.
I shouldn't laugh. Why am I laughing?
Is she still voicing Detective Conan?
Because it's weird to marry the person who plays a character you created.
Hey, listen, Anno dated the girl who does the voice for Asuka, so, you know, we shouldn't really judge.
He's dodgy.
And Oda married a woman who played Nami in a stage show.
That's not as bad.
There you go.
That doesn't feel as bad.
That's not as bad as the woman who's been playing your character.
Imagine when the lights are off and you're talking. Yeah.
Is she still doing the voice of Detective Conan?
Oh, yes.
Then no loss.
Snufkin.
Is that... I was reading your show notes. Is that correct?
That is correct. Is played by Takehito Koyasu, who recently played Dio Brando in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I was sitting there going... I can't see the connection.
See,
I was
trying to imagine this like a more sinister like chord, and perhaps, well, obviously it's true, but yeah, I was a bit surprised.
He also plays Aokiji, or Kuzan, as he is now, in One Piece. And that's more of a similar sort of delivery and role.
After this show goes out, I demand people put up pictures of Snufkin with the comment, "You thought it was Sniff, but it was I."
I thought you were going to say pictures of Dio wearing Snufkin's hat. And he was also the voice of Bo. So he's got a lot of range. Sniff, however, is played by Ryusei Nakao, And that is the voice of Freezer from Dragon Ball Z. And Caesar Clown from One Piece. So I might suggest maybe not as big a range on his... I'm sure he just got cast as Caesar Clown because of Freezer. I'm sure he has plenty of other voices he can do. And Little Mai is Rei Sukuma, I think most famously perhaps Shampoo in Ranma One Half, Kazumi Amano in Gunbuster, and Anthony, she was the voice of Sakura in Ginga Legend Week.
Oh, wow. Ah.
Tying
last week's episode.
Last week's episode.
So she was Amano-san in Gunbuster? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got a quiet range, because I don't think any of those characters sound alike at all, do they?
Which one was Amano in Gunbuster? Is that the...
The big sister.
She's the big sister character. The one Naruko is looks up to.
So we watched a nice, I think, Japanese DVD rip. Whatever, it's a nicer looking DVD than the one we got in the UK. And it looks better than what I remember the PAL TV version looking like as well. In fact, it looks amazing. The first
it actually does.
I'd say it just, I didn't actually realize, for some reason when Brian sent me the link for the episode, I was looking at it going, okay, this is probably how the original English dub show was. And then Brian sent me a YouTube link for the English dub, and it looks like ass, basically. It looks terrible compared to the Japanese one. It's the Japanese one is so colorful and bright, and then you get to the English one. And I want to talk about the English dub. We're going to talk about the English dub. I absolutely will talk about the English dub. But it looks terrible. It looks genuinely awful.
Yeah, and the DVD looked worse than it did on TV. The DVD also has sound problems, at least the first volume of it does. It is very, very cheap.
Have
you
got this DVD?
What you pay for.
Obviously. Oh,
I had it.
Is it all of the moments you've got on a DVD?
It's in multiple volumes. I think it's like four volumes. I think that has everything.
It feels like something I should own, but now I don't want it because of what you described.
But yeah, if you buy it, you'll be like me and you'll be like, ugh. I mean, it's not as bad, it's not as disappointing as the Get a Life DVD, which still is the angriest I've been at a DVD purchase.
Screaming at the box.
the amount of stupidity in DVD authoring on that Get a Life DVD, particularly because it's from Shout Factory, who are normally excellent.
Ah.
It's like, how the hell did this get through quality control? I suspect people were unable to say no to David Merkin. Anyway, back to Moomins, and won't go off on my Get a Life rant one more time. So this again is an adaptation of the first part of 1948's Finn Family Moomin Troll. So once again, it involves a magical hat. Once again, it involves the house turning into a jungle.
Once again, Moomin turning into a really, really creepy and more westernized version of what a troll should look like.
And once again, that is solved by the love of Moomin
and the captain. Oh, no, hold on.
At this time.
Should have cut to the captain at the end of the episode. they didn't need me after all.
Just Gary Gaber in his airship.
That'd have been a great little nod. And people would have thought, what the hell? And never ever show him again in that series.
Well, that would not happen because this series was made with the answer.
Well, I don't know if that holds water. I believe it to be true, but they would have been wanting money.
Their names on the credits.
What if they were just wanting money? You know?
I get the sense when we were doing the research for this in the weeks leading up to the podcast, I got the sense that the Hansen family kind of jealously guard their IP completely and utterly, and they are quite happy to turn down gobs of money if it looks like it's going to taint their legacy.
Yeah, and I believe this does have original stories in it, but a lot of it is adaptations of the novels and the comic strips. And finally in this episode, we got to watch an episode with Snuffy in it.
I used to always think as a kid, can he be trusted? Never trust Snufkin. I always felt like he had an ulterior motive. I'm serious.
You just don't trust
him. I like him as a character. He's so bloody good, but he's got a weird air about him. Like he's
Well, yeah, he has an air about him, yes, because he's like this traveller and he leaves the valley, which the other characters don't do.
I like to imagine that Snufkin goes to the big city, which is in a section of the country that Moomin Valley is in, which is actually under the control of a totalitarian state. He raises hellfire to defeat the enemies of freedom everywhere, and then goes back to the valley every so often to get himself a bit of a recharge.
It would be very relaxing in that valley. Well, sometimes,
yeah.
Providing nothing crazy is going on.
He fights against this totalitarian state because his mentor, the captain, died helping him.
That's his father.
Get insight into Philip's movie.
This is what he's going to be dreaming about tonight. Or lucid dreams.
No, Captain, I want to help you. I want to help you.
But yeah, the reason, a big part of the reason why it looks so good is the amount of details on the backgrounds. Especially in the Moomin House.
Yeah, I have to say, the Moomin House looks so good. It looks like a real place. Now, I know full well that a lot of its geographic nature doesn't make any sense from a building standpoint, but it doesn't matter. It's so fun. And like every time you think, oh, well, there's the bedrooms, there's the living room, there's Moomin Papa's study, there's the kitchen, and there's the living room. And then we go underneath and there's a basement and there's a storehouse and there's an upstairs kind of rooftop kind of attic, and it's like, oh, this is so awesome. And then when you find out that they have that lovingly recreated in Moomin land in like minute detail. But I did actually find out that their version of the Moomin House, they were just told you can design it any way you want, and that kind of just makes me really sad that they didn't bother to follow the exact design.
Still,
does it keep this quality throughout the series? Because in my head, it does.
I think the first two episodes look better than everybody, because I think the first two is the ones where Nakura's more hands-on.
Okay.
Do we want to talk about the differences between the 69 adaptation of Finn Moomin Troll, Family Moomin Troll, and this version?
You can do, apart from the fact that this one's much more accurate, except having Little Mai present.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, let's talk about Little Mai, because I've been waiting to talk about it. Seriously, she is going to get people killed. Like,
she was my favorite character as a kid.
So predictable. That is so Brian. I should have known.
Like, of course, yes. Brian would like the anarchist. Of course.
I don't understand people who wouldn't,
I never liked Little Mai as a child, but I think now watching this again for this, I can kind of see a bit more. She can be liked, whereas as a child, she annoyed me. So
I have to say she's more tolerable in the 90s version, but like the second episode after this, like any kind of credit that you've built up with her on episode one just blows it out of the water completely in episode two, because she just screws everyone over in episode two. And I mean that. She, okay, so the episode ends with them getting rid of the hat, because the hat's basically almost gotten Moomin exiled from Moomin Valley. Okay, so they decide, get rid of the hat. So unlike the other one where they kind of just, I'm trying to remember, in the 69 version, what happens to the hat?
I can't remember either.
Does it not roll down a hill? I'm sure. Okay. I seem to think it just rolls away.
I'm just going to roll.
Oh, no! Say, okay, the antlion takes it. I think.
Oh yeah, he takes it back.
I think.
Yeah.
So is the antlion doubling as the hobgoblin in that?
Yes, in the 69 version he is, but in the 1990s version, the episode ends with them getting rid of the hat by throwing it into the river, where, you know, the nearby river where Moomin's house is. But it just floats down the river, and you think, oh, well, that's the end of it. Except the episode preview tells you that next episode they're going to find a hat again. And the hat comes back into their lives, and Little Mai, for whatever reason, the psychopathic little wench decides, she just goes, do you know what I'll do? I'll throw a couple of threads into a hat. And we'll just see what happens. It'll be great. And what happens is the hat starts to grow these huge kind of tree trunks, like vines and stuff. And it just starts growing from the bottom of the basement of Moomin's house. And it just keeps growing and growing. And Little Maya's awesome. She just calmly, almost sociopathically, walks upstairs to Moomin Mama and says, Moomin Mama, there's a giant tree growing in the bottom of the house. Thanks. And Moomin Mama just goes, okay, I just need to see this for myself. She spots it and goes, oh dear, I better tell Moomin Papa. And all the while, the house is getting more and more destroyed. And there's Little Maya going, isn't this great?
Then Moomin Papa gets his muskie.
Yeah, because that is where the 69 one gets it more right, is because it's Moomin Mama who puts the things which turn into a jungle.
Oh, of course, yes, yes.
Which is in the book.
Yeah, because it's the eggshells.
Yeah, in the book, apparently, according to this Wikipedia thing, it's poisonous pink perennials she puts in the hat.
Ah.
But that's, I think after they go and see the Hattie.
Well, patterns. in this episode, at least they address it that they want to use it as a bin. Which.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense, because it, yeah.
So, like, if you put eggshells into the hat and you get clouds, if you put a cloud into the hat, would you get eggshells?
A lovely fried egg.
Does it work like that?
A lovely fried egg. Soft-boiled. That'd be great.
That will poison you. Yes, of course. Because, like, that's where the hat works.
And who does the hat belong to incantation of it all?
The hobgoblin.
Okay. Okay.
He will show up later.
No. Who rides a panther.
Oh.
Yes. He is quite the badass.
Who's as knowledgeable about Moomin Valley as the parrot is?
Oh, so he knows everything. Yeah. See, this is what I feel like I watched a lot more than what I clearly have. Cause I can't remember that character at all.
Cause he shows up cause he's looking for the suitcase that Thingamy and Bob have got. Which contains a ruby. Which belongs to
him. He does look quite badass.
Yes, I'd forgotten that he has a flying panther. I mean, that adds to it a great deal. I mean, it's great being the hobgoblin, but...
You're a hobgoblin who rides a panther. I mean, that instantly moves your credibility up.
Oh, I dream about that tonight. Fly a panther through the sky.
With lasers.
Oh, of course, yeah.
All has to have lasers.
Samurai swords for arms.
Yeah. I had to say, though, to skip back to something that Brian brought up, I had to say that this version of the show is probably the one that, even if the 69 version and the 72 version were accessible, you would still go back to this one because it looks as close as you possibly can to the books without having to accurately try and recreate the exact look of the books.
Yeah.
And I have to say that when the show is on TV, and it still is run on TV, I still see it every so often on like some BBC programming block, and it says something to the longevity of the show that it's still being run to this day. And I think it's to do with the fact that in looking up the origins of the Moomins, I was looking up Janssen's original reason for writing the Moomins. She wrote this in the last year of the Second World War, and she said she wrote it because the Second War was a depressive episode for her. Like, she couldn't get over the complete colossal loss of life and destruction. So she wanted to write something naive and innocent. And I think the reason why this version, the 1990s version, is it perfectly captures the feeling of the book, where it's something nice and innocent, and it has no ulterior motive. It's not trying to sell you anything. If you want to buy a plushy version of the Moomins, go ahead. We're not going to say anything to you. But other than that, I mean, it's the perfect version of the show. Now, I know that you were saying there, Brian, that there were these, like,
stop motion animation.
And I know that I was supposed to go see a screening last year of a stop-go motion version of the Moomins, which is available on DVD now, by the way.
Comet in Moominland, isn't it, I think?
I was going, oh, that'll be great, I'll go to the Moomins, and then I never went. And then I saw that I was going to be able to get tickets for Moomins on the Riviera, and I was like, great, I'll go to that, and I never went to that either. So I can't say for the stop-go animation films or the live action, oh god, that'd be great.
I look forward to them trading those hippos.
Yeah. But I think that the 90s version is the best version. Like, if you're going to introduce people to the Moomins, you let them see this version. Don't let them see the films however good they are, or the god-awful 69 version, or even the 72 version, just show them this one. And you can pretty much be guaranteed people, if they're that interested, will go off and find them in books.
And they did a movie as well of this. I don't know whether it was a compilation.
Of this story, of this, the hat story. Or...
It's Comet and Moomin Land they did. This production team.
Oh, I see.
In 92.
There's that many different versions and films and stuff. I'm looking at Moomins and the Comet Chase. Is that a completely different story? That's like a weird...
I don't know.
I don't even know how it... Does it look somewhere? I don't even know. But if you go to IMDb, there's lots of different... things.
Yeah, there may be some other random Moomin adaptations that I'm not sure of.
Do we want to talk about the dub?
Let's talk about the dub, yes.
It's my childhood right there.
I'd forgotten that the episodes are dubbed by someone who seems to be channeling Orson Welles.
And narrated.
Yeah. So here we are in Moomin Valley. And it's almost like the Findesats, you know, it's like, every July, Mrs. Buckley gathers peas. It's like, I was sitting on, why is he channeling Orson Welles?
It's a good voice. The intro, don't forget the intro. The intro is perfect.
But they love the laughing and they love the living.
Such a great intro.
It's catchy too, because it's easy to remember.
I like the dub a lot. I mean, I haven't. Don't have much I mean, I like the idea that Solid Snake is Papa Moomin, of course, but... if only I was Japanese, I would love to just watch that in its entirety. No, the dub's good. I am more than happy with the voices in the dub.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I thought when the first couple of minutes, I was like, this is a bit like... you know, nails on a chalkboard, but after a couple of minutes, you kind of remember what it was like to sit down when you were little and watch it, and you're going, it's not so bad. It hasn't aged as badly as other dubs of Japanese programs you watched as a kid, and you listen to it now going, God almighty, this is just an abomination. It's not as bad as you remember it to be.
Who does the voice for Snufkin again? Because it's a spot on voice, I think. Is it someone famous or not?
John Chancer. John Chancer is an actor known for Casino Royale 2006, Silent Hill Origins 2007, and Desperados, The Shadow of El Diablo 2001. I'm thinking less for that one. What else has he done?
Not a lot.
He's the voice of Chatsworth in Chuggington.
He's the voice of Chatsworth in what?
Chuggington.
It's like a CGI train thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And in Casino Royale, he's a police commander. That key cog in the James Bond franchise.
Don't you hate it when you look up your favorite English voice actors and you find out that they've done this role and that role and this anime and this cartoon series, and then you go, their live action section is like background character in an Indiana Jones film, that sort of thing. It's like,
but in your head, they're the best voice ever. On screen, they're a nobody. A face for radio, perhaps. No, that's unfair.
Check out operator in Hot Fuzz, you know.
He's an award-winning narrator of many audiobooks.
Oh, well, there we go. He's got a little bit.
He is an American... who has a long association with the theatre on both sides of the Atlantic.
He's probably doing pretty well then, if that's the case.
Here we go. Amazon.co.uk. Worst narrator I've ever heard.
Bullshit.
It's a review of him reading The Cobra.
The Cobra?
The Cobra. Frederick Forsyth, The Cobra. I don't know whether the Cobra hammers on his keyboard quite as loud as it is.
And is it audio CD or audio download?
Audio CD.
Audio CD.
Okay, yeah, so I'm Susan Sheridan is Moomin. That was the voice I'd always recognise from Jimbo and the Jet Set.
Was the dub one of the Great Britain affairs, or was it done like like we were saying earlier on, it was dubbed with the intention of showing in America.
I think it was dubbed. I think it was dubbed in Britain for the intention of showing internationally.
Ah, okay.
So it's got that sort of an Americanized twinge to everything.
It's really strange that we were talking about this, like, you know, the Janssen family have a kind of like a total control over the Moomin property, but I found it really weird that it's very hard to actually collect the Moomins on DVD, unless you happen to live in Japan. In which case, you've got complete and utter enabling going on. But anywhere else, it's almost impossible, because you either can find places that will sell it to you in, like, season bricks, or you can find places where they sell them in, like, one disc affairs with 4 episodes a disc. And this thing had over 100 episodes alone. And I'm sitting there going, they're making it impossible to like Moomins on a home entertainment form.
I think they only dubbed 70 or so. I don't think they dubbed every episode.
But like, what I'm saying is that the Japanese version was completely dubbed for all 100 plus episodes. And then obviously the Swedish and Finnish versions, they were also dubbed. But everywhere else, it's like, nah, you're cool. You can just make do with the first couple of dozen episodes.
Yeah, it's, there's 4 volumes and they are a decent chunk. But as I say, they're pretty shitty quality. Yeah. And they're on a label who aren't, actually, is that another release? Stax Entertainment.
I've got it here. It's Moomin Season 1 complete. Stax Entertainment. I think I'm reasonably certain that Stax is basically Fabulous Film in another form.
I thought they were Quantum. I thought they were distributed by Quantum. We're getting into real, real British. But my knowledge is now almost 10 years out of date. So.
Yep. Stax Entertainment. Yeah, I got it here. It's they're an English outfit. And you know you're into some really fine work when Stax Entertainment's Facebook page appears in the search results above their official website. 42 likes. One person has visited. That's awful.
Yeah, there are some like labels who just don't quite exist. But yeah, that's Stax. That's not a UK address. So, they're in South Africa.
Oh,
that's Stax Entertainment. So there may be multiple Stax Entertainments as well.
You know what? You know what's terrible, Brian, is the fact that I've come to the conclusion that I'm not going to really be complete unless I have at least one Moomin plushie. Because the more I stare at the search results in Amazon, the more it's getting harder to say no.
Yeah, because while it's difficult to get a decent copy of the TV series, it's pretty easy to get everything else moving at the moment, to the point where there are... Is that Moomin shop still open in Covent Garden?
Is there? Oh, wow.
I know there was one. Hmm. I don't know if it was just like a pop-up shop or whatever.
The Moomin mugs are really expensive, though. 16 quid for a mug. It's a lot.
Yeah, 43 Covent Garden. Yeah, there you go.
Moomin shop. My God, Brian, this is terrible. You've just made it even worse.
I'm in London this weekend. Maybe I'll pop to the Moomin shop.
Hey, don't spend too much money. You've got to try and buy it, get a hotel for
it. I think Greg will be thinking of cancelling it. Oh, it's a long story. It involves a watch.
Okay.
And that's about it.
What are you doing buying watches? 2015.
It's a nice watch.
You don't need to, Anthony. You can just get an app with a watch on it.
Oh, I could just ask somebody for the time. That would be easy. That's for another discussion, though.
That's even worse, Anthony, because then you're just a person in the 21st century coming up to somebody saying, happen to have the time.
That spelled trouble. They'll probably think I want to rob them. Because there's not too many reason somebody asks that.
It's like he's probably coordinating some sort of terrorist attack. Jump.
But no, I feel bad for dropping out, Brian, because, well, you'll have my company for the weekend.
No, won't be able to do a podcast.
Well, we will. One way or another. Greg's already said this.
Well, yeah, well, there you go. You just have to check in November. So you leave it last, leave it very last minute. Put it on the credit card.
Oh, don't even. No. No.
Do we, like, I just wanted to bring up something. There seems to be some sort of disconnect with people online between the Moomins and the original Moomin stories. So there are two types of Moomin stories. There's the book form and there's the comic strip that Janssen did for some
decades. I should say as well.
Yeah, it was like they did it for decades. So that's what we have in terms of printed form from the Moomins. I can't speak for anything that's been published after that, but that's what we have. And I said it to Brian and Anthony in one of the other podcasts when we were talking about doing the Moomin podcast. And this, I could not believe this has happened in the 21st century, that where people have the ability to look shit up on the internet first before they purchase things. And I'm sitting there going, okay, great. And then literally in my Amazon box, it pops up, oh, you know, here are the latest releases for this week. And the latest release was like this wonderful hardcover of the Moomins, which has just been published in America and the UK. And it's just like, it's the complete collection of the, mm-hmm. I think it's the comic strip that's been collected. And I was like, oh my God, this is so awesome. And it was just, it was one of those things where I've taken to this thing where I scroll down to see what the reviews are like. And I always look at two things, the 5-star reviews and the 1-star reviews, because they basically tell you the truth of the matter. And I find 1-star review of this Moomin book, and it says, didn't like it. Didn't realize the pictures were in black and white. And I just sat there going, what? And I couldn't leave it, lads. I have to, and I will actually tell you, just bear with me what I actually
this
said.
This is like when I bought Zetman in French. I didn't really write a bad review. Well, it came and it was in French. But I bought that Moomin Deluxe Anniversary Edition. I've still not even had a read yet. That's
all right. There's still 4 volumes of Popeye sitting
on
the shelf.
Oh, God, I may have to buy Popeye. Stop doing it. Oh, I hate it.
Okay, here we go. How do I get this?
Oh, did you actually write back? Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
No, this is going to be...
Slippery slope.
This shit will not stand. I have to talk about the Moomins. I was like, okay, so... The person replied and said, you know, like, it's in black and white, I didn't like it. And I replied with, unfortunately, there was a terrible color ink shortage between the years 1200 and 1958. Many book publishers and artists struggled through these terrible years. Hopefully you'll find it in your heart to forgive, if not forget. And they replied with something along the lines of, they should have advertised. And I came back and I said, I just don't get how you can be annoyed if the book you bought is a black and white based on a color cover. I would suggest you do more blind buy research before you blind buy. Leads to a less upset and a happier you. Thanks. And the person thereafter deleted every comment they had except for the original.
The thing that annoys me about that is because surely only someone who cares or is interested in the movements would ever want to pick that up.
And
it's
cheap.
Not. Well, I can't remember how much it's £32.50 at the moment, which I think is really good.
Yeah,
which
is like 39 euros or 40 euros for me, and it's about the same in dollars and converted over to British pounds or euros.
Well, 50,000 yen as well.
It's like
yen conversion.
It's not cheap. I mean, it's like you're not going to suddenly go, ah, sure, I'll just waste 3 or 4 good rounds of a pint on a book. Oh no.
It's a niche market as well, I feel.
It's like, you have to have gotten into Amazon. You have to have logged into your account. You have to have gone searching for it. You have to have clicked on it. And at no point did you ever go, is this really what I want to buy?
Well, they could give me the book and I would have 2. I'd have one that I would read and one I would keep for good.
Like, I wouldn't mind, but like, even the Moomins teach us that it's better to stand back to examine the problem first than rushing in and making a mess of the whole thing. Like, Moomin Mama and Moomin Papa will be educating this person going, like, relax, do a bit of research first. It's fine. It's all right. I don't understand why people don't get this. It's like, the Moomins can teach you so much. You just have to watch them. I mean, it's easy. Why doesn't everyone just watch the Moomins? I don't understand this.
Everyone should have a DVD. Should be like a Bible next to the Moomin's DVD.
Rightio. So, yes, watch the Moomin's, but if you're going to watch any Moomin's, watch the 1990 Moomin's.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking
the
about
Moomin's.
Three anime based on a novel.
Right.
So now it's time to play a game where I shall see whether you can identify other anime based on novels from their IMDb keywords.
Can we have an example? I like examples.
Okay. No. I'm going to read you out keywords of a top 10 IMDb animated, a Japanese animated film or TV series.
Right.
Based on a novel.
Okay.
So your IMDb has lists of keywords which people submit themselves. Some of them are short, some of them are long. I'm just going to read them out one at a time in, let's say, alphabetical order.
I would like, I was hoping you'd say, Philip goes first, then I could get the gist of it. You know?
No, you can just, either of you jump in when you think you know the answer, but you only get one guess each. So don't jump in too soon.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. First one. Anime. Yeah. Based on book. Based on novel. Character name in title. Female protagonist. Foreign language adaptation. Japan. Now, here's the one which is probably going to give it away. Miniature person.
Arrietty?
That's bingo. 1 point.
I was actually going to say that a little earlier, but safety first.
Okie doke. Let's move on to number two. Excuse me while I click links. Okay, here we go again. Sort alphabetically. Okay, this one has 84 keywords. So. I think you might get it quite early, though. Okay, so 18-year-old, 90-year-old, affectionate kiss, airplane, anime, anthropomorphic fire.
Howl's Moving Castle. Boom!
Bingo.
Oh, I was going to say it.
Okay, next one. There's seven of these in total, so still a chance to catch up. Okay, here we go. Alphabetical order. 1940s.
Grave of the Fireflies.
Bingo.
I'm a machine.
Okay, number four.
I now have four chances to pull this back.
I can sit back and relax if I wanted.
Hang on. If I put it in there twice. Or did I copy the wrong one last time? Okay, here we go. Alphabetical. Accident. Anger. Anime. Appearance. Aunt-niece relationship. Back in time. Baseball. Baseball bat. Baseball glove. Based on a book. Based on a novel. Bed. Bedroom. Bicycle. Bicycling. Black humour. Break.
Kiki's delivery service? Oh, that's not a book.
No.
No.
So, you get all 94 keywords if you want, Philip.
Okay, go on.
Bully. Classmate. Classroom. Clumsiness. Crying. Date. Desperation. Dream. Dreaming. Drinking, exam, failed brakes, falling from height, falling in love, faulty brakes. Someone's really fixated on those brakes in this film.
It's not the girl who left for time.
Oh, it is the girl who left for time.
That's good.
You kept saying brakes, and I was like, that is only one film I've ever seen that's like that.
Okay, next up, number five. This one has 84 plot words. Okay, here we go. Adult animation. Anime. Antihero. Astral. Based on novel. Blood. Blood splatter. Bounty Hunter, Bow and Arrow, Burial, Castle, Cemetery, Countess, Crossbow, Cult Film, Dagger, Dark Fantasy, Dark Hero, Dark Heroine, Decapitation, Dampire.
Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, no.
Yeah, actually. I'm holding my tongue.
Dystopia, Eternal Love, Falling from Height, Female Vampire Hunter, Funeral, Future, Good versus Evil, Gore, Gothic, Grave, Good, Half-Breed, Horse and Carriage, Animal, Human or Hybrid, Illusion, Immortality, Japan, Katana Sword, Kendo, Kidnapping Knife, Literature, Martial Arts, Melodrama, Mercenary, Mixed Martial Arts, really? Monster, Moral Ambiguity, Mutant, Neo-Noir, One Man Army,
Parasite. Can I just stop you there? It's definitely based on a film. It's definitely based on a novel.
And it's not Vampire Hunter D.
I think I know what it is, but...
Keep going.
One Man Army, Parasite, Poetic Justice, Post-Apocalypse, Prequel, Racism, Remake, Revenge, Rocket Ship, Shadow, Sheriff, Spell, Supernatural Hunter, Supernatural Power, Surrealism, Sword Fight, Tank, Tragic Event, Tragic Love, Train, True Love, Undead, Vampire, Vampire Human Love, Vampire Hunter, Vampire Slayer, Vampirism, Violence, Warrior, Werewolf, Woman in Jeopardy, Woman Vampire Hunter, and Wuxia Fiction. Anthony,
have we talked about this before?
All 84.
Have we? Yes, I can remember a spaceship. Like, does he go away on a spaceship at the end? Like, the villain?
Leading
Anthony.
Rocket ship.
Okay, come on, you got
this. This is really hard, you know. It's based on a novel. Like, how loose, like, a visual novel? Are we going to...
No, okay, I know you know it. Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust.
Oh, come on.
I was thinking that all the time, and then I thought...
I would point out, and I'm not
pretty
being
much set the plot.
Pernickety about this, but I'm just pointing out that that Brian at no point said I had to name the sequel.
Well, that's what put me off.
But yeah, you got further down. I said prequel though, didn't I? So there you go. That was the clue that it...
Damn.
Oh, shit.
Okay. I can't believe I read 84. You better get this one, because this one got...
I can't believe I didn't get it right. Like, I knew the rocket bit.
Anthony, wait until 179 to answer the question.
Well, I'm going to let this one last.
Okay, here we go. Abuse. Advertising. Alter ego. Amusement park, anime, apartment, arboretum, Asperger's syndrome, balcony, balloon, banner, bar, bartender, based on novel, bed, betrayal, bioelectric, blood, borderline personality disorder, brain damage, breakthrough, bridge corridor, business card, butterfly collection, cage, camera as portal, car, carousel, cell phone, chairman of the board, character name in title. Chase.
Paprika?
Circus. Huh. Yes.
I was actually going to say that far earlier, but the thing that puts me off is, was it based on a novel? I can't always think. Ah. I'm pretty good at this.
You are. Think area of expertise.
Throw buzzwords at me and I'll get the answer.
That's the same one again, Brian. Let's try that again. Maybe Chrome trying to walk. No, it's my copy button not working. Let's do a shortcut. If you wanted copy and paste commentary, you just go there. Right, here we go. 10 plot keywords.
10?
Okay. Whoa.
10. Yeah, this one not quite as popular as the others. Less keywords. I think it's still gettable, though. Anime. Asian. Based on novel.
It's going to be a big...
I'm not sure
this
is right.
Okay.
No, this may be misleading. I'm not sure.
Well, three dud words so far.
character name in title.
So it may not have the character name in title, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know the books. I didn't think any of these people's is a name, but maybe it is. Directorial debut. Dragon. No, here's the one which gives it away.
Tales of Earthsea.
Tales of Earthsea. Got to it first.
Got to do it first. Yes, Philip got to it first. So that's 4 points to Anthony and 2 points to Philip. That is how you play the keyword quiz.
Enjoy
this. Yes, I thought that worked quite well.
It's like it's becoming a ritual with us is that Brian comes up with these fiendish games and I get defeated miserably by
him. I tell you what, my win to loss record at the minute, I'm pretty sure it's really good.
I had to read all those keywords.
I swear to God, Brian must be that bloke on the bus who sits there with his pad and his pen, and the pen's half in his mouth chewing them.
And then he starts laughing.
And just writes more stuff down. They'll never get this.
No, I'm not that. And I try and make them. I deliberately, apart from Tales of Earthsea, I think they're all ones which have got like 15,000 votes.
So who's called Earthsea in that film?
I mean, I don't know. Never watched the film or read the books. No. But I'm pretty sure there's nobody called Earthsea.
Oh, God, that's stupid.
That is the problem with them being user-submitted. You get people obsessed with breaks and people putting the wrong keywords in. But, yeah, you've got to have 25,000 ratings to go in the... to be qualified for, like, the 250, top 250 ranking thing. I don't know if that's the same for like the bottom.
Wait, so Tales of Earthsea is in the top 250? Oh. Okay.
No, it's not, no. And it doesn't qualify. So that was the one. But a lot of the ones I use, at least five of them, are over the 25,000. And once you get over that point, then you start getting more people.
I see.
In other words, what Brian's trying to say is that there's a 50% chance that he threw in Tales of Earthsea just as a bone for me. Otherwise, I'd just walk away with one bloody point.
No, because basically I was trying to get 7 in, and once I was expanding it down like below 5,000, you were then getting loads of light novel adaptations, which you've got barely any keywords in the first place. So it's like. Whichever the fate wants is based on the book. It was like one of those. And also, I want to avoid using... I use a lot of Ghibli ones, but I'm sure there was even more ones I could...
For a second, I thought it was just going to be Ghibli at the start.
That was the... Yeah.
I actually thought, until Brian pulled the rug from under me and said, oh no, I wasn't talking about Vampire Hunter D, I was talking about Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust. I thought he was talking about Helsing. I was like, but I already called out Vampire Hunter D. He couldn't possibly call out another title.
I was so... It described Bloodlust perfectly in every way. Werewolf, train, crossbow, tank. Crossbow.
I was sitting there going...
Vampire Hunter, Dampier. I'm sure you said Dampier. Yeah.
I did say Dampier, yes.
That's what I was like, yes, this vampire. No, it's not. You got the wrong answer.
Well.
Because I figured once I told you got the wrong answer for just Vampire Hunter D, Anthony would go, oh, it must be Bloodlust. Not that I'd have to read all the other words.
Maybe I knew what it was all along. I would have got it right in the end if that was the case. I can't even fake that. I can't even feign that. Oh, well.
Okay, Philip, anything you want to plug?
What was I going to plug? No, not really. I mean, I'm slowly but surely reactivating my own website, eperschoice.com. I put it into hibernation over the summer because I kind of hit a writer's block and I couldn't really write for my own stuff anymore. And I was finding myself kind of going around in an endless circle of doing work for other people, but not actually for my own website. So I'm slowly reactivating it now. My column on Anygamer's finished over the summer, and I'm just kind of not doing much. I mean, I'm just fiddling around doing reviews for other websites. I do actually appear on this great podcast called Dynamite in the Brain. It's this podcast called Michiko and Hatchin, which hasn't been posted yet.
No,
I've been busy.
I know. No, other than that, that's about it. I'm just, you know, regular old me, as always.
Yeah, you're next in the queue of about the four podcasts I need to put up.
I know. I'm seriously, I keep forgetting
we're behind, and then an episode will come out. I was like, oh shit, we did do that episode a long time ago. I don't want to spoil the magic.
Yeah, I need to catch up because we've got to do the...
The big one.
Anyway, Anthony, do you want to plug
AdventureBastards.com? Or just search it on YouTube. We've just finished a Halloween episode. No, it was good fun.
Is that weird? Is that separate continuity from your normal?
Yes and no. It's apparently 5 years or so before our current bunch of adventurers. And, like, we got to roll, like, really strong characters and stuff like that. But, I'm not even gonna spoil. I still managed to die. In a weird way. I'm not gonna spoil it.
So it's still Call of Cthulhu?
Yes, it was. Oh, what's the name of it? I can't remember the story's name, but it's basically there's a people are going missing in this little village, and you end up in like a cemetery, and you go underground, and there's ghouls and stuff.
I was going to say it's Call of Cthulhu. There's no such thing as a really strong character.
No, I guess not. But our skills were well attuned, I guess. It was hard to fail a roll, but I still managed to fail rolls. A long story short. But yeah, that was good fun. Twitter is AntAskew. Go and follow or don't. That's it.
And you can find me on Twitter at awesome_engine. And as always, you may find this podcast at dynamiteinthebrain.com, on facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on player.fm, and many, many other podcast aggregation sites. So you want to subscribe to it on one of those sites or just directly on the RSS feed. But if you're on one of those sites, write us a review, because that helps people find out about the captains of heroism that are Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye.
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 Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the Brain.